Next case on our calendar is 08-1624 in the matter of Darius J. Smith, alleged delinquent child. I should indicate that Attorney General, their request has been given time, 5 minutes of oral argument at the end of oral arguments on behalf of neither party. So Mr. Lieberman is back sitting at the Appellee's table. Okay. He was given a choice of which table at which he wanted to sit, but his choice of that table, I'm told, does not reflect the Attorney General's position in the case. Okay. Ms. Burns.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the Court, Ms. Steffen. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. In August 2007, the Allen County Juvenile Court reviewed a number of statutory factors and determined that Darian Smith should be classified as a juvenile offender registrant with duty to comply with registration requirements annually for 10 years. However, moments later, and without any additional action by Darian, the court told him that what it had just determined no longer mattered, because the legislature mandated that he be classified as a Tier 3 juvenile offender registrant who now must register every 90 days until his death. If the Allen County Juvenile Court was correct in its interpretation of the juvenile provisions of Senate Bill 10, then Darian's classification is unconstitutional, and he has the same constitutional claims, or many of the same claims, that have already been raised by the appellants in the cases earlier today. If, however, the Allen County Juvenile Court erred in its interpretation of Senate Bill 10 as it applies to juveniles, then Darian's case must be remanded so that he can receive a classification that comports with the law. In this case, an offense-based classification applied to juveniles effectively criminalizes the result of a juvenile adjudication. Unlike traditional dispositions for juveniles, sex offender registration and notification provisions extend beyond the jurisdiction of the juvenile court until the child is beyond the age of 21. Also, the fact that the classification in this case attached to Darian as a result of his offense and based solely on his offense, that adds to the criminalization of his classification. And now he's receiving penalties that closely mirror those of an adult.
In this case, we don't have a real, do we have a retroactivity issue? Because he was sentenced, he had a hearing, he had a prosecutor, he had a judge, and the judge said, as I understand, the main issue is I have no discretion. You are automatically this category under Adam Walsh. Is that a correct assessment?
No, Your Honor. There is a retroactivity issue in that Darian's offense was committed prior to the enactment of Senate Bill 10. His offense was committed in 2005.
Okay, and so at the time, you still maintain that argument. But then isn't one of our main issues is whether the juvenile judge retains discretion or whether that has been taken away by Adam Walsh. Is that one of our key issues?
I believe that that is an issue that this court should give guidance on, even though it's not the main issue in this case. I believe that it is necessary for this court to give guidance on that. Right now, there is a split amongst the appellate districts as to whether juvenile courts maintain discretion in determining tier level. And the 3rd District and the 5th District right now represent approximately 36% of the counties in the state. And so even with just those 2 districts alone, finding that there is no discretion, that has affected a lot of children. So, yes, I do believe that argument or that issue should be addressed by this court.
And if we find that there is discretion, what does that do to the other constitutional challenges?
Well, 2 things. For now, it does render those issues moot because Darian would have to have a new classification hearing before he could raise any further constitutional claims since his classification was conducted contrary to law. However, what we have argued or what we've stated is that the constitutional issues for Darian may be solved with a finding of tier discretion. However, that would not solve all the constitutional claims that could be raised by juveniles who have been affected by this law. And mainly that is due, Your Honor, to the fact that Senate Bill 10 delineates between age of offender, not just offense, but the law classifies children differently under the law depending on their age, depending on their status. We do believe that the juvenile provisions of Senate Bill 10 permit juvenile courts to retain discretion. Unfortunately, that is not what the Allen County Juvenile Court found, but we believe that in 2950.01, subsections E3, F3, and G3, there is a clear distinction that juveniles are not to be subject to offense-based classifications like adults are. The subsections allow for classification for any offense relative to the offense within a particular tier, and the General Assembly did remove the enumerated offenses from those juvenile subdivisions. So we do believe that the plain language of the statute does support a finding that juvenile courts retain discretion. Also, in 2152, 82, and 83, the fact that the legislator specifically references a hearing where a juvenile court makes a determination as to whether to classify a juvenile as a Tier 1, Tier 2, or Tier 3 registrant, that also supports a finding that juvenile courts maintain discretion.
Are they required to use the new Adam Walsh tiers? In other words, the old classification hearings, the old categories, the old standards are gone, and even if they retain discretion, they still have to use the new standards?
Your Honor, the legislature does mandate that, even retroactively apply, that those new tiers are to be utilized. So, yes, they would have to still use the tiers to classify children. However, what we suggest and what the Ninth District did in Ray GES was it utilized the factors that are now in 2152-83D to make a determination as to what tier, or to direct a juvenile court that that's how it's supposed to make a determination as to what tier to place a juvenile in, is utilizing the factors that previously existed.
So if a juvenile, and as your client was 14 at the time, a 14-year-old commits an offense that under Adam Walsh is a Tier 3 offense, that 14-year-old then is subject to the lifetime registration every 90 days. Is that what you're saying?
That's how Derine was classified, yes. But what we're saying is that, given the plain language of the statute, that a court could actually take a youth who has a Tier 3 offense, or what would be a Tier 3 offense for an adult, and use discretion and classify that child as a Tier 1 or a Tier 2. We believe that the reading of the statute does not mandate a finding of a Tier 3 offense for a juvenile who has a rape adjudication.
So the idea that ordinarily in juvenile court, 14-year-olds may be under the control of the juvenile court till age 21, Adam Walsh requires every state to basically give up the juvenile system and treat all sex offenders, no matter what age, 14 on or... Is that the minimum? What would be the minimum age here?
Yes, Your Honor. 14 is the minimum age, and that is what the federal act requires. What we would state, even though it's not before this court presently, as Derine is not yet 21, that there is a jurisdictional problem, and there may be future challenges for children who are classified as juveniles and then turn 21 and then still have their classification under Senate Bill 10 in this case.
So this really fundamentally shakes the whole the idea of the juvenile justice system.
It certainly does, Your Honor, and I think that that's been illustrated not just in the way that this was applied to Derine, but also in some of the other provisions of Senate Bill 10. Now certain youth are subject to community notification under the new law. Not only that, but Senate Bill 10 has created a new class of juvenile offender registrant known as a public registry qualified juvenile offender registrant. And those youth are automatically Tier 3, automatically subject to community notification, and automatically included on the Attorney General's electronic sex offender registration and notification database.
Counsel, is it your position, your belief that under the new statute there can be a hearing where the juvenile judge can terminate registration requirements?
Yes, Your Honor. There are two sections which govern the juvenile court's ability to either reclass or declass a child, and that's 2152-84, which happens at the end of a child's disposition, and 2152-85, which is where a child may petition the court for a reclassification or a declassification.
Reclassification in the case of juveniles is done through the court as opposed by the Attorney General. Is that correct?
For certain youth, Your Honor. However, there are also a number of youth who likewise, just like Mr. Bodike and Mr. Schwab and Mr. Shinaki, who received letters from the Attorney General reclassifying them. That's not Darian, but we do have a number of juveniles that has applied to who have the same right to file a challenge petition that the adult defendants had after receiving their reclassification letters.
And is it... I just question whether you should, whether a defendant would wait until they were 21 as opposed to declaring now that it prospectively. It seems to me that they would have to transition out of the authority of the court and petition to have their registration terminated at that point and be denied before they might have a complaint.
That may be the case for a particular complaint that the juvenile court no longer has jurisdiction. However, the fact that this is attached solely as a result of his offense gives Darian a colorable claim now in that at the time that he committed his offense, the only registration level that he could have been subject to was as a juvenile offender registrant. Given the facts of his case and given the way that the statutes were written, the court could not have found him to be a sexual predator. So even though he's not 21, he still has a constitutional claim as to the unconstitutionality of his current classification. How exactly or what mechanism he would use upon turning 21.
And you're saying it's unconstitutional because it's a criminal classification in your definition.
Well, Your Honor, that it essentially criminalizes a juvenile adjudication, that attaching a classification based solely on offense after this youth's offense had occurred prior to the Act's enactment, that in essence takes this out of the purely juvenile realm and puts this into this adult realm where we're now punishing the child for an adjudication that he received as a youth.
Counsel, I'm struggling with what it is you want us to decide. Your proposition of law relates to retroactivity.
Yes.
Right? But in your introduction, I'll just read what you say in the last paragraph, which is what you've been talking to us about this morning. A particular concern in this appeal is that an offense-based application of Senate Bill 10 to juveniles effectively treats juvenile offender registrants as the same as adult offenders, yet without affording juveniles the same due process rights their adult counterparts have enjoyed in their classifications. Just as in the case of In re Smith, the constitutional question presented is paramount to this appeal. However, and perhaps before the constitutional question can be answered, the court must give guidance as to whether juveniles are to be classified the same way as adults, based solely on their offenses, or whether SB 10 vests juvenile courts with discretion to determine tier levels for registration eligible offenders. That's quite different than the legal question of retroactivity.
Yes, Your Honor. Specifically, what Darian has requested is that this court would find Senate Bill 10 unconstitutional as applied to juveniles. However, given the split among the appellate districts, what we've asked this court to do is, if the Allen County Juvenile Court was wrong, meaning if the court should not have applied an offense-based scheme to Darian, that this court would remand his case because his constitutional claims arise out of how he was actually classified.
So, first and foremost, what you want is for us to say Senate Bill 10 is just plain unconstitutional as it relates to juveniles, period. So retroactivity doesn't matter. You want us to take another step and knock it down as it applies to juveniles?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that specifically I've requested that it cannot be applied constitutionally retroactively, that within the propositions of law, that it cannot be applied to youth whose offenses predated its enactment. So that is the primary concern. However, I am well aware that because of the fact that there is dispute over the language in the code, that if this court finds that the Allen County Juvenile Court misinterpreted Senate Bill 10 as applied to juveniles, that puts DeRyan's constitutional claims at bay for now, because he would have to have a new classification hearing.
Okay.
And I see that I'm running close to my time, so I would like to reserve the remaining time for rebuttal if there are no further
questions.
Thank
you, Ms. Burns. Ms. Steffen.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, if we were to accept, if I could just ask this question first of all, if we were to accept that this cannot be applied to juveniles as a matter constitutionally, would that affect the funding under Adam Walsh in and of itself?
I don't believe so. I believe the Attorney General's office partially dealt with that question, that if the court finds any section of it unconstitutional, I think the state would still get its funding.
Even if we were to say juveniles are not covered by Senate Bill 10 or cannot constitutionally be covered by Senate Bill 10?
I believe so, but I would like to touch on that. I really believe all that Senate Bill 10, whether it's an offense-based system or whether it's discretionary with the court, really did not change a lot. It really just changed as to this defendant how often he registers and how long he registers. He's still subject to, at the end of his dispositional sentence, which means when he gets off parole, when he gets off probation, the court looks at it again. And then after that review hearing, he can petition every 3 years or every 5 years to have it declassified or reclassified.
How can a juvenile become subject to a lifetime reporting requirement if the authority of the juvenile court terminates when he reaches adulthood?
I believe in the statutes that the legislature has given the court the additional authority to go past the age of 21 as it pertains to sex offenders. I believe there's actual statutory authority in that in the 2152.82 in sequence. I believe the authority is in there. I just don't remember off the top of my head which statute that gives the authority to.
So we could potentially have a 42-year-old sex offender coming back to the juvenile court every 3 years seeking a termination of a reporting requirement.
Correct, Your Honor. That is possible. I would note that certain provisions have maintained the same throughout. For instance, that if you're not 14 at the time or older, that you are not subject to classification, that has not changed. If you're 14 and 15, the court is not required to classify you. There is a hearing procedure that the court must go through to determine whether they're going to classify you or not. The 16 and 17-year-olds are the only class that is required to be classified unless the child has a prior sexual offense. In that vein, then the court is required to do some kind of classification, whether he's 14 or 15 at the time.
Counsel, we've heard situations where adolescents are sending explicit photographs over the Internet or to each other, let's say. Where does that fall? If there's a conviction, where does that fall within the tier scheme?
Off the top of my head, I would assume that's probably going to be Tier 1 or Tier 2. If the child was not 16 or 17, the court would not be required to. If the child was 16 or 17, the court could always take that off at the end of its disposition. But I believe it's a Tier 1 from the top of my head. I didn't look specifically at that today, since that's not the facts of the case. But I believe he'd be a Tier 1. If he did well on probation, he may have only had to register one time, that initial registration, and the court could remove it immediately.
But that individual would go on the sex registry, correct?
The individual would go on the registry for law enforcement only, not on the website. The only children that would show up on the Internet website are the public registry qualified juvenile offender registrants, okay, which means that child had to be a serious youthful offender, which meant that he had the protections of the adult system when he was charged. He's indicted or he pleads to a bill of information. He has the right to a jury trial. All those protections that are given the adults are available for those that are classified as a public registry. A pork chore is what the acronym comes out to be, Public Registry Qualified Juvenile Offender Registrant. So he has those adult protections before he shows up on the Internet.
Counsel, is the list of these juveniles a public record that is with the police?
The juveniles that are classified, yes, they are public.
They're classified as sex offenders.
They're classified they're
not,
as sex offenders.
Some of them don't go on the Internet, and only in those the situations that you just mentioned is Internet dissemination. But there is a list that the local sheriff mm-hmm. keeps, and that is subject to disclosure to the public.
And that has always been the case.
I understand that. Okay. If this juvenile goes through this registration process, and as you said, he may only have to register once, and then the court terminates, is the record expunged as to the prior registration requirement, or is that forever a public record, unlike other juvenile records? If you don't know, I'm not asking you to guess.
No, I don't want to guess. I don't know right off the top of my head. I haven't looked into that. I know there's specific expungement and sealing of record, and there's a difference between the two.
In Senate Bill 10?
No. Just generally overall.
Yeah, I understand that. But mm-hmm. but I just wondered if you knew during the in Senate Bill 10, is there a provision for the expungement or the sealing of records for juveniles that have their registration requirements terminated by court?
I would assume that once the court takes off that he's a juvenile offender registrant by removing him completely, he doesn't have a duty to register at all, that would remove him from the Sheriff's Department's file as to those being registered. So if somebody came in and asked, you know, who, can you give me a list of people
being
registered?
Let me see who was registered in 2009, and here we are in 2012.
There's no specific exception for that, as I read 2950, for if you're coming off that list, that the Sheriff's Department is required to take it off there. I did not find that in 2950, either under the old law or under the new law.
Okay.
What's the state's position on whether this is a discretionary hearing or not?
You know, looking at the statutes, it appears that there is a problem. The language that we would need under most juvenile sections, that adjudication being found delinquent, is not in the definitional section of 2950 under any of those definitions in 2950.01. The problem becomes, though, that the Attorney General's office was required by statute to reclassify any juvenile that was under the old system. And without those offense-based classifications, I don't know what authority that the Attorney General's office had. There's no default provisions, as if this juvenile was a predator before, that he automatically goes into any position. Those are not in there if the only way to classify is by being classified by a judge. I guess my position is that it was intended to be offense-based. The language of 2152.831 and of 2950.01 in the definitional sections does not use the word discretion. It's not in the statute anywhere. If the legislature intended that it be discretionary to the court, I would assume that that language would have been in there. The Attorney General's office in their brief has indicated that 2152.83b2 talks about some factors that the court's supposed to use. Those are factors specifically for 14 and 15-year-olds when a court's determining whether to classify them or not, not as to what tier level to use. Without the offense-based system, there is no guidelines as to what makes up a Tier 1, what makes up a Tier 2, and what makes up a Tier 3. There's nothing to say that if the child has a prior adjudication of a sex offense, that he should be bumped up in tier. There is some argument that you guys will hear next from the next case from the state that talks about the legislative intent. The intent was to do an offense-based system. The language that was in there that Ms. Burns talked about that was removed would have been too expansive. It would have caused a conflict with 2950 and the 2152 sections that apply to sex offenders. So I believe that it was intended to be offense-based, but it doesn't say that in the statute. The only other points that I'd like to point out is that the community notification has to be by court order. That has not changed since the prior law. Again, the only juveniles that show up at the Internet registry are those juveniles which had the rights of adults in their underlying offense, those being the public registry qualified juvenile offender registrants. They were subject to the serious youthful offender, which meant that they had to be indicted or they had to plead to a bill of information. They had a right to a jury trial, right to counsel. All those would have been in effect in order for them to show up on the Internet website. Interesting to note that under the old law that they could end up on the Internet if they were considered a predator and if they committed certain offenses. That was in the old system, that there were juveniles that could be subject without having the SYO. That protection is now in Senate Bill 10. And I wanted to correct another thing from the Public Defender's Office. They said that the juvenile in this case could not have been subject to a predator classification. In fact, he was subject to a predator classification. The court declined to find him as a predator during the underlying hearing. The only thing that he could not have been was a habitual because he had no prior sexual offenses at the time that he committed the underlying offense. If there are no further questions, I would rest all my arguments in the brief.
Thank you, Ms. Steffen. Mr. Hogan, I think you should go now before rebuttal.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. Jim Hogan from the Attorney General's Office. Amicus, the Ohio Attorney General, offers a third position. Thank you. Amicus, the Ohio Attorney General, proposes a third position, which is not completely aligned with either party, but the threads of which you've heard, I believe, already in the arguments from both parties. First, the plain language of the statute does preserve discretion in the juvenile courts when addressing a 14-year-old such as Mr. Smith, not only as to what tier to classify him in, but whether to classify him in the first instance. Secondarily, however, while the Attorney General does agree that this case should be vacated and remanded for further proceedings, the specific remedy requested by the appellant would not be the proper remedy. Turning to the first point as to the discretion, there's been mention made of Chapter 2950.01 and the definitions there. There is a clear juxtaposition as to the General Assembly's intent of when to include a juvenile and when not to include a juvenile. For example, the definition of a sex offender, that's 2950.01B1, includes those who have been found guilty or pled guilty or convicted of an offense, those are the adults, as well as those who have been adjudicated delinquent of an offense, those are the youth. When it comes to the definitions of the tiers, however, this was also alluded to, for the offense-based classifications of adults, that is exclusively limited to those who are convicted of or pled guilty to a specific offense. The youth are not automatically classified by their offense. There's a separate provision in each of the definitions of the tiers requiring that there be a judicial adjudication by the juvenile court to place that youth into a tier. Secondarily, looking to Chapter 2152.82 through 0.85, these are the provisions where the juvenile courts actually look to the classifications of the youth. In the case of Mr. Smith and youth who were 14 or 15 at the time of their adjudication, at the time of their offense, the statute expressly provides that the juvenile court need not assess any classification whatsoever in 2152.83. If it does hold a hearing and does determine that the youth should be a juvenile offender registrant, the court still has the discretion at that point to determine into which tier to place the child.
Let me clarify. Is that only for 14 and 15?
There are separate provisions for those who are 16 and 17, Your Honor, and children under the age of 14 would not be subject to these provisions.
Do you maintain that the 16 and 17-year-olds are still discretion?
There is some measure of discretion, Your Honor. In the first instance,
measure?
Certainly, and I'll explain. For juvenile offenders who have already committed a sexually oriented offense, 2152.82 would require that they be labeled a juvenile offender registrant. It does not, however, indicate into which tier the juvenile should be placed, leaving that to the juvenile court after a hearing for that purpose. Similarly, in the 2152.83 differentiates between 14 and 15-year-olds, as I've mentioned, and 16 and 17-year-olds. And in the latter category, there again, the court has the discretion into which tier to place the youth after an appropriate hearing.
So, counsel, are you saying for juveniles we still have a risk-based system?
In some sense, Your Honor, I'm not sure I completely agree with the distinction between a risk-based and an offense-based, but to the extent that there is an adjudication here, we're looking at factors, for example, in Mr. Smith's case, as to the nature of the offense, whether the child has shown remorse, the public interest in safety, likelihood of reoffending. Certainly the juvenile court is vested with a vast amount of discretion, which certainly includes determining, as you would term it, a risk-based analysis.
So, I mean, likelihood of reoffending really gets into, is this going to happen again? And that's what we're at least concerned about in terms of deterrence, are we not?
Right, and that's one of many factors that a juvenile court may consider. The statute simply states all relevant factors should be considered, lists examples, but it's not an exhaustive list.
So you're saying it doesn't just depend on the offense as to what tier a juvenile should be placed.
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor.
Counsel, do you agree that the requirements extend past 21?
That is correct, Your Honor. And it depends on at what point the classification is placed, and I would add as well that there are several bites at the apple, if you will, for the youth to revisit that classification. I believe these have been mentioned. The first is at the end of the disposition of the original disposition of the youth, where they can not only be reclassified downward or declassified, and then there are the ability post-disposition, at least several opportunities at intervals of several years, as indicated previously, where the youth can seek, or the adult at that point can seek, to have that classification lowered or removed entirely.
And would it's been argued that that is more of a support for this being a criminal sanction or altering the civil nature of the proceedings in juvenile court because of this long-lasting effect gives more credence to the fact that this is criminal in nature. It extends past the age where the purpose of juvenile court has expired for, you know, rehabilitation and et cetera.
And in fact, Your Honor, I would say that that underlines the General Assembly's intent that this be civil and remedial, in the sense that the purpose is to give the public the information necessary going forward for a group of individuals whom the General Assembly has identified as being a group worthy of being having their information registered, and in some circumstances, as indicated previously, in limited circumstances in the youth context, but having that information available publicly. And so I believe that may cut either way, depending upon the arguments one brings to the table. But in fact, I think, indicates the civil and remedial purpose intended. I'm out of time, Your Honor, and if I may be indulged, I have one point I'd like to make with regard to the remedy.
No, you've used your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Burns, take 30 seconds.
Ms. Burns, I threw a curve at you, and it would have been all right for you to tell me I was reading from your brief in the next case instead of this case. I wouldn't have been offended had you pointed that out.
All right, Your Honor. I would like to point out to the court and just remind the court that DeRyan did receive an offense-based classification, and that's on which his constitutional arguments stand. Notwithstanding the fact that he gets an opportunity to be reclassed or declassified, that still doesn't solve the problem of an unconstitutional initial classification, which is what happened here. What we have found is that an offense-based classification, what it does is it doesn't identify who's most likely to reoffend. And in the case of juvenile offenders who are the least likely to have those same properties apply to them as far as protecting the public, studies have shown that juvenile offenders have vastly different recidivism rates that juveniles who've been put through proper rehabilitation actually have low instances of recidivism. And for those reasons, we think that the justifications for calling this a civil and remedial statute is a bit disingenuous. For those reasons, we've asked this court to find Senate Bill 10 as retroactively applied to DeRyan unconstitutional. However, in the alternative, if this court finds the Allen County Juvenile Court misapplied the law and that there is tier discretion, we would ask that the court would remand DeRyan's case for a new classification hearing.
Thank you, Ms. Burns. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.